I want to live in a world where gender isn't a deciding factor in opportunity. Hey, it's Vanessa Paisani, and you're listening to Amplified, the show where we're changing the stories we tell ourselves about women, and as a consequence, about men too. Because remarkable women aren't a supply problem. There's just so many of them out there, and I believe we need to hear from them. So that's where I come in. We'll also be chatting with some men about the topic as well, because we want to hear their stories on this too, especially why this topic is more important than ever. And to you, thanks for joining us each week for great conversations with remarkable folks and believing that remarkable women aren't a supply problem. Hey, and welcome to episode 4 of Amplify. Thanks for joining me today for a discussion with Katie Davey of FemWalk. And as we open into the episode, you'll hear her describe a bit of FemWalk and the platform that she's creating. So we're going to have a discussion about representation broadly, and we'll move into some, of course, specific discussion and specific questions. I hope you enjoy it. If you're not familiar with FemWalk, it's a policy podcast that focuses on bringing a gendered perspective to decision making. Hope you enjoy it, and looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
So today I'm joined by Vanessa Paisani, and we're going to have a conversation about representation quite broadly. We're also doing things a little bit differently today. So Vanessa also has a podcast called Amplified by Vanessa Paisani. So she'll be posting this audio there as well as an episode. So just before we get started, I'm going to introduce myself really quick for her listeners, and then I'm going to ask Vanessa to introduce herself for our listeners over at FemWalk. I'm Katie, and I host FemWalk, which is a public policy podcast that's focused on talking about both traditional and innovative public policy through a gendered lens. And we're quite broad. So again, today I'm excited to talk a bit about how representation does relate to public policy and decision making. If you're listening over on Amplified, we'd love for you to follow us over at FemWalk. Vanessa, over to you.
Yes, and I would second that. I would recommend everyone to check out your podcast. Policy is something that I only know at the very, very high level, so I've been learning lots from following you, and I love that you're focused on a gendered lens. I think that's something that I look forward to exploring through listening to your podcast. And I'm really happy to be chatting with you today. So if you folks are listening from FemWalk, I've started a podcast, as Katie mentioned, called Amplified with Vanessa Paisani, and added my name to it because there are many things called Amplified. And we're exploring conversations with women, both from Atlantic Canada and beyond, on the topic of gender. I realized last year that my life's mission is creating a future where gender doesn't restrict opportunity for anyone. And so we're not just talking to women, we'll be talking to men too, but we're, as Katie mentioned, really exploring the theme of representation and how do we change the story? Because I know we all want to potentially live in a better world.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Vanessa. And yes, I didn't mention off the top, if you're here with FemWalk, go and follow Amplified. before we get started, actually, I would just like to, just kind of playing off of what Vanessa was mentioning about her journey with Amplified, it's actually kind of interesting. It was really probably around this time last year, Vanessa, when you were getting going with Amplified and kind of playing with the idea a bit, and we had the opportunity to sit down and chat. And I remember being so excited that you were kind of having this conversation and contemplating what it could look like, because yeah, I too really felt that conversation was lacking, and it was something, and I remember very distinctly telling you it was something that frustrated me deeply. And so when I think back to, again, that conversation about a year ago, in my mind, those are kind of, that conversation is kind of where the roots for FemLong got started. So I just wanted to thank you for that conversation. And yeah, I mean, it took me a bit, about a year, but it really, I felt like that, yeah, that was a great conversation. And it started, again, the wheels turning for me on how I could kind of take a bit more control in a way that you were doing as well.
Yeah. And thanks for meeting with me then, because part of what I was struggling with was I had this idea and I just like, oh, you know, I'm just not sure where to take it. And meeting with people like you really helped me frame the idea. And it's funny that you say it took me a year, and I feel like Amplify probably took me a year before I had the courage to really like launch the website, which was just right around this time last year. And I think one of the things I've learned, or maybe one of the things I keep relearning, is patience and getting okay with really the fact that life doesn't change overnight. And I think by nature, I like to keep busy. I like to keep going. I like to push things forward, and sometimes I get impatient, and then I've built myself some strategies now where I kind of take a step back and I'm a bit more understanding of how long things can take, because I think that's been perhaps one of the most important lessons I've learned over the last few years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's such a good point, and I will keep that in mind as I move forward too. I think it's a great lesson. So I mean, we talked a little bit about it just here at the beginning, but one of the things that you kind of really built into Amplify East was this hashtag that you use, not a supply problem. And so I love that. So I'm wondering if maybe you would talk a bit about, I guess, kind of where that hashtag came from, and a bit more around kind of where Amplify East came from, and what was that kind of experience like, and kind of a bit into what the problem you were trying to solve is.
I think it was, well, October 2017, I was getting ready to do some traveling, and it was when the Me Too hashtag really came to light. Of course, it had been a movement that had started prior to that, but really got going right around that time in the popular media, I guess I would say. And as I started having conversations with people, it was interesting because none of the women were surprised and all of the men were shocked. And I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And I've been really thinking a lot about storytelling, and I've been following Humans of New York by Brandon Stanton. So if you're not familiar with that, it's basically storytelling of everyday people through a lens that you don't often hear. And I think that it really connected with so many people, and people outside of New York, of course, because it just felt really human. And he's, of course, since gone on to do profiles of people in many areas of the world. And I really liked his approach. And so as I got to thinking about, you know, what's my unique skill set and what could I potentially contribute to this, what I'd call systems change, the system I want to change is gender. I realized gender, I guess we could spend some time talking about whether it's a system or not, but I'll just put that to the side a little bit and say that was what I had recognized that I wanted to move the needle on, and I wanted to get storytelling in there. So as I started reaching out to people, one of the folks I reached out to was a woman I met through 21 Inc., a leadership development program I had done in Nova Scotia. Her name is Louisa Dongo. And I know she had been thinking a lot about this too. And she said, I love it. Why don't you consider something like a tagline of inspiring women aren't a supply problem? And as soon as I read that, I said to myself, I'm like, that's exactly what I want to capture. Because I've had the chance to work throughout Atlantic Canada, and I've met so many awesome women. And it was so interesting because I felt like in typical media, we just never hear from them or don't hear enough from them. And so I thought, you know, what could I build to hear more diverse voices? And so it really started as this call out on Facebook to see if people would share their stories. And I was terrified, of course. I was terrified because I thought, well, maybe maybe people will hate it. Maybe I'll get some backlash. Maybe I'm risking my personal safety, or maybe no one will even care. And luckily people did care. And I just received this overwhelming positive support. And, you know, I've met a lot of people through this project or initiative. I had another friend, Sarah Short, help me build the website because that is not my skill. I've had people accept nominations, people nominate people. I've just learned so much through it. Really, the fact that actually there really isn't a supply problem, and every story I read really just confirms that.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I think that it's so important, like you said, that the stories exist and the people exist. It's that these stories are not in the traditional kind of mainstream media, or you know, these incredible folks are not being asked to comment on stories or even just things like that. Yeah, so I've enjoyed the journey. I've really enjoyed the journey, and I've enjoyed reading about so many great people that you profile. I guess, I don't know, that's the word.
Yeah, profiled. And I will say, for anyone who doesn't know, Katie has a profile on this site, which I would recommend checking out. And I agree with you. There's just so many, like every single story has such a nugget of wisdom in it. And there's been people with all kinds of different lived experiences, which I think is also important. People from rural areas, newcomers, people from different age groups. And so I've been really pleased to see the diversity of stories. And even then, I feel like there could, of course, be even more diversity in the stories. So hopefully growing some more of that more this coming year.
I'm excited to see how you grow it and read about more amazing folks. Although absolutely there are amazing women in, whether it's Atlantic Canada, New Brunswick, or Canada or the world, we also know that when you look at, for example, corporate boards, C-suite positions, governments, elected officials, really across the board, there's still a significant underrepresentation of both women and just more folks with a diverse background. I think, you know, we do see progress being made. And I think of, you know, in respect to elected office, for example, there are organizations like Equal Voice Canada or Women for 50% in New Brunswick that are, yes, you know, pushing for that inclusion and kind of pushing to remove barriers. But I think I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. So on kind of the one side, how it's so important to highlight the amazing things that are already going on, but how do we still continue to push for that change to see more of a diverse perspective in all decision making, again, whether that's from the C-suite all the way to municipal governance, for example?
It's such a loaded question, isn't it? In the sense that there's no easy answer. There's definitely no silver bullet. And it's been interesting having one-on-one conversations with people about it, because now that it's obviously pretty public that I consider myself a feminist, and I'd be happy to describe what that means to me, but people will often assume that I believe that we have to have 50% representation legislated, or like, you know, seats for these positions, and that they're not
quotas,
earned.
Basically.
Yeah, quotas, yeah. Exactly. And I'm not saying that we should or shouldn't do that. I think that there's cases where that's absolutely the case. But what I've come to kind of land at is this whole idea of, when we talk about this, there's just, it's so laden with what I feel is probably hidden assumptions, hidden bias. And I just find having these conversations really difficult, because the real question is underlying this. It's, why aren't these people's voices at the table? And I read this great book just at the end of last year. It was called The Person You Mean to Be. It's written by a professor in the US. Her name is Dr. Dolly Chu, Chugh. It's basically this amazing book about bias. But one of the quotes I wrote down about it is, it's hard to explain that things that are visible to you and invisible to others, which is how systemic bias works. And I feel like people that are in decision-making power that haven't considered systemic bias, don't understand perhaps why we need those other voices at the table. And as a woman, you know, there's just so many things that might impact me that might not impact other people. I don't have children, but if I did, I would want to make sure that those perspectives were at a table, whether I was a woman or a man. And there's all kinds of things there. So I think, you know, I do think that we need more diversity across the board in decision making. And I think that economically, that's been proven to return higher profits or dividends or you know, whatever word you want to use. And so the real question is, how do we analyze our own bias in the decisions that we're making? And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I don't have my own bias. So part of the the journey I've been on is unpacking what that is and how that intersects with the decisions I make or the tables I find myself at. But I think it's important to speak up no matter what side of the table you're on. And if you have power, to ask yourself, you know, whose voice isn't here and how can I get that here? And if you don't have power, how can you find some allies? And I think in cases where you feel like you're in the position of having less power, sometimes it feels like you're bashing your head against the wall a little bit, because you know, it feels a little bit hard to feel like you're making progress. And one of the things I actually liked about that book as well, The Person You Mean to Be, she talks about this 20-60-20 approach, basically a bell curve, if people are familiar with that, on where do you put your efforts. So there's always going to be about 20% of people where you're never going to change their mind. So probably going to be a very difficult place to put your efforts. So you might want to start working on the 20 or the 60%. So the 80% of people that you can influence that are open to seeing what their bias might be, or that the system might not be perfect, but they haven't maybe had anyone call them on it, or they maybe don't know how to change, or they're a bit scared to talk about it. And I think that happens a lot. People are scared to say the wrong thing. I've felt that way before, you know, even in feminism, I always worried. I'm like, I feel like maybe I'm not a good feminist, because I didn't even know, you know, like, well, what's a good feminist? It's like, it's a hard thing to talk about. And so the more welcoming we can make these conversations, I think the easier it will be. And welcoming, but also, I think it's important to acknowledge that they're also difficult conversations. And so how do you put some parameters and some boundaries and maybe a facilitator on having these kind of conversations, whether they're at a public level or in a private office?
You've given me a lot to unpack there.
Oh my gosh, I know, it's so hard. And actually, one of the questions I've been exploring on my podcast, and so as it was clear from my very rambly answer there, it's something that I've been thinking a lot about. The more I think about it, the more I realize I have to go deeper and deeper. But my question to you, Katie, is when did you first become aware of gender?
I was thinking a lot about this actually after I listened to your first podcast and you asked the guest that question. On the one hand, it's kind of like, you know, when did I realize the color blue was the color blue? Like, I don't remember. I feel like I always, you know, was aware of gender. But what I mean by that is, if we get back to what you said a while back, but the kind of system that is gender. So I remember from an early age understanding that, you know, I was a girl and therefore there were certain things I did and liked. So, for example, I played with Barbies all the time as a kid. Now I'm so like, did I actually like Barbies? I don't know. I think I did. Right? Yeah. But it's like those kind of funny questions. But the other thing that was interesting about I guess my childhood. So I did competitive cheerleading. It's not, you know, what a lot of people still think it is, which is, you know, the Bring It On movies or, you know, mm-hmm. cheering on the sidelines for your school team. It's not at all that. I was, you know, at an elite gym from a young age. But in that case, too, I remember being, you know, 11, 12, and having, when we would compete, you had to look a certain way. So your hair had to be perfect, like pulled back, curled, bow. You had to have a full face of makeup on. Yes, even if you were a 12-year-old. And you wore a uniform that was skin tight and a short skirt, right? Like that is the reality of the uniforms. In hindsight, and actually as I continued, I actually did competitive cheerleading all up until university. But I remember actually in university really starting to think critically about the hypersexualization of the sport, and it continues to this day, there's no question. But so that was kind of my situation that I grew up in. But I don't think I really realized that there was an opportunity for me to be disadvantaged because of my gender until actually I was president of the student union at UNB. And in that role, I was operating in many systems that were built by the patriarchy. No, but no, so I was operating in a university system with, you know, an administration that was, when I started, I think all male. There was a woman that was brought in during my mandate. So anytime I would do any sort of internal advocacy, that was my scenario. Then government advocacy was another piece. And plus, an interesting stat that I always like to bring up is at UNB, I was only the second woman in a 10-year span to be the president. And since then, there hasn't been another woman elected president of the student union. So that's shocking when you consider on, you know, today that women actually make up more of the population on a university campus. But even in university or student union politics, there's a discrepancy. So I think that really in that role was the first time that I recognized that there are situations to which I would automatically be a step behind because I was a woman. And I guess that's, you know, more than recognizing gender, but yeah.
And I've seen you talk about FemWonk, where you show a photo of basically walking past a wall of New Brunswick premiers every day. I was wondering if perhaps you could comment a bit on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, in my role in the premier's office, there is a wall of photos of all of the past premiers of New Brunswick. For those who are unaware, New Brunswick has never elected a woman as premier. So every single day, I worked there for 2.5 years. I did the math at one point. It was kind of 800 and some days, maybe. That is the photo that I walked past. So when you start talking about kind of systemic bias and even confirmation bias, when that is your surrounding, whether consciously or unconsciously, you're being told a story that these are what the people look like that can do this role or job. So I think that just, yeah, getting back even to my question to you about getting more of a diverse representation, regardless of if what I often hear is, well, for example, well, women have been elected, therefore there are no barriers to elect women. And I think that that's bonkers. But there's just mm-hmm. that first step, right? It's that when you're told this story, even if people aren't blatantly telling you this story, which sometimes they are, you start to believe it, even if you don't know you're believing it. And so that was really, that's what that wall said to me, or what I reflected upon. It's again, when you show it, well, actually it's exactly back to, I've always known the color blue was blue. And that's because somebody told me that blue was blue. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very similar situation. But.
Yeah. And I just want to add one thing to that, because I agree, it's the blatant message and then it's the hidden messages that we get. And I found myself at a New Year's Eve party where I was having this conversation with three men. They found out that I was, you know, a quote unquote feminist, and they were all telling me, they had no questions for me about what feminism was. Somehow it came up that they all felt that men were just genetically better at math and science, even though out of the four of us in the conversation, I was the only one with a science degree. And, you know, and I asked, you know, okay, well, where is your evidence of this? And of course, you know, there isn't any that they could come up with, but they just felt like that was the truth. And it's the truth because that's been the narrative for so long. And when I studied science and I graduated from my science degree many, many years ago, I mean, even then, people were already starting to talk about unpacking the systems or the way that science is done has a bias to it. And those things, you know, we're getting past them, I think, slowly, which I think is that whole thing that I keep reminding myself of about the patients is, you know, if we zoom out and look at a long time horizon, we've come so far, which I think is so important to celebrate. And then when we zoom back down to the day to day, we know that there's still a lot of work to do. Then it goes back to the question of, you know, what's my individual role in doing that? And going back to this book that I keep talking about, which I totally loved, it was the best book I've read in a long time. I was joking on social media that I've been waiting for this book forever. I just didn't know that someone was already writing it. But, you know, she talks a lot about the whole mindset of being like, the less we try to be good people, the better we'll be, by acknowledging that we all have blind spots, we all have things that we don't see. And the more we're willing to acknowledge that and have a conversation about that, I think the better off we'll be.
No, absolutely. I'm going to have to get that book. I wonder if the Fredericton Public Library has it.
I've been using the library so much too. Like what? I used to use it a ton when I was growing up, and then I hadn't used it for so long, and then like, why am I not using this? This is crazy. It's like, you can order it online and then it gets there, you pick it up. It's just, I know, so convenient. It's
amazing. Just cognizant of time here. We're getting up. We've been going for a while. This is such a great conversation. Any final thoughts or anything you want to add?
Final thoughts. I guess as a final thought, thanks for exploring policy from a gendered lens, because I think it's something that we don't often hear about. I think it's something that is difficult to talk about. And because it's difficult to talk about, it's even more important to find spaces to talk about it in. So I think that what you're creating here is a platform to have those really important conversations. And I think sometimes we don't realize how much policies and things like that, decision making, how that impacts our everyday lives. I'm really looking forward to seeing where you take the podcast and these conversations, because I think it's so important to have a diversity of voices. And I think at the end of the day, everybody's a little bit different, but we all have lots in common, and curiosity about each other, I think, is really, or finding common ground, is really going to get us further in these types of conversations. That's what I've been trying to do. And there have been times where I found it extraordinarily difficult, but yeah. I keep reminding myself of it. And it's something that I will continue to work on myself. So thanks for creating this space to talk about this really important topic.
Oh, thank you so much. I don't know what to say. I would say I'm blushing, but you can't tell because I've got a voice for radio.
I love it.
No, thank you. And again, thank you for taking the time out of your day to chat with me about some of the great work you're doing. And what I love about Amplify is that although you fill a role of convener in a sense, you're putting the spotlight on so many people, and you're bringing those folks to the forefront and bringing incredible women and incredible people and stories to a place that they might not have been. And I just think that it's it's a very noble, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but I just think, yeah, it's a very worthwhile cause. And I also look forward to seeing how Amplify East evolves over time and look forward to hearing about more great people.
I know, me too. It's been fun. I love all the stories.
Yeah. So, Vanessa, where can folks find you at?
So the Amplify East website is www.amplifyeast.com, or you can type .org or .ca. It'll get you there too. And the blog page is amplified.blog, or you can search for us at iTunes or on Stitcher, Amplified with Vanessa Paisani.
Awesome. And for the Amplified folks, you can follow FemWonk at FemWonk.com, or you can search FemWonk on Twitter and Facebook. And to get to the podcast, we stream on every platform. So feel free to check us out there, or you can get to us right from the website. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Katie Davey of FemWonk. If you're interested in following us for future episodes, we're over at iTunes, Amplified with Vanessa Paisani. And as I mentioned in the open of that episode, I did have to throw my name in there because I realized Amplified has many different searchable things, whereas I think perhaps I'm the only Vanessa Paisani around. Hope you enjoy it, and looking forward to having you join us next week.